Area Dental Society brings to you The Drill Down. We're your hosts, Dr. Shwetha Ramanathan and
Sarah Carter.
today's guest is Dr. Jonathan Kimes, who is an orthodontist and proud practice owner of Circle C Ortho. We're talking all about what it really takes to be a practice owner beyond the highlight reel. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Kimes.
Thank you guys. I'm excited to be here for the first episode of the Drill Down, so I'll look forward to it.
I want to dive right in. I know that the way that you came about ownership is an uncommon or unlikely story, and I was wondering if you could share with the audience how that happened.
Yeah, sure. So, throughout this podcast, this is going to be a kind of a recurring theme, and that is that my path to owning my practice is unique. So, when I was in ortho residency, one of my faculty members that I was good friends with decided that he was ready to build basically a second practice. And he was looking for a young orthodontist to come and join and kind of make a two doctor, two practice, kind of a small group thing. And he chose me. So what that turned into was basically while I was still finishing up residency, he was busy here in Austin, building out a second physical location. And then when I graduated and moved to Austin, I basically hit the ground running. So what that looked like was we were now a two doctor group with two practices. So I came in on my very first day of being an orthodontist into a brand new practice with zero patients. So in essence, I was a new doctor with a startup right out of school, but with a little bit of help.
That sounds like quite the impressive journey and quite a tall order as a new orthodontist and new to practice ownership as well. So I want to back up a little bit and ask you, was ownership always the goal for you, as a dental student, as an orthodontist? What were your thoughts on that since, this opportunity landed in your lap?
Yeah, it was. I was in dental school in the early 2000s. And the times have changed quite a bit in just that 25 years. So when I was a dental student, being a single doctor practice owner was still very much the norm. And so all of our instructors, guest lecturers, anyone who would come to talk to you as a dental student, almost all of them were single doctor private practice owners. So that was, excuse me, that was always kind of the point of what we wanted to do. To be honest with you, back then, I didn't know enough about business models to know any different or to even think about other things going on. So even as a young dental student, I'd always knew that I wanted to own my own practice. I think that was kind of accidental just because I didn't know about the other options. So yeah, that was always the plan, even as a young student.
Now, I want to ask you, did you have any reservations about not being having been an associate first or having had that experience and kind of diving head first into ownership?
I did not, excuse me. Again, I think it was just ignorance. I had it, I don't want to say I had it thrust upon me, but I was given this opportunity to jump right in. And I knew it was a great opportunity, and to turn it down for any reservation would have been, a silly thing to do. So I didn't have any reservations. But as the saying goes, you don't know what you don't know. I didn't really know what I was getting into. I just knew I was going to go do it. So, I'm sure the reservations I should have had will come up in conversation later about some of the things I learned. So,
Did your instructor give you the opportunity to have any input into that second location, where it was located or
yeah,
built?
100%. We formed our partnership, on the surface and legally before I was even a graduated orthodontist. So, location, everything about the practice, anything you would think of when you're building a practice, what instruments you buy, what brackets we're going to use, what chair brands. We were both a team on that. He ultimately had the final say as the boss. But yeah, he brought me in very, very early into that process. And I was able to learn quite a bit about building a practice through that.
So now that you were, you know, when you were a student and you've known this mentor, your business partner as a student, and then while you've been a practice owner, how did that relationship change? Did you feel like you had to, you know, earn a spot to have a say in those business decisions? I know you kind of mentioned that he had last say on certain things. How was that for you? Did you feel like you had to earn a spot, so to speak, to be seen as a partner, or how did that relationship evolve?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, on day one, we both know that I don't know anything about running a business, or for that matter, being an orthodontist. You know, a young orthodontist still has a lot to learn. But we both had a huge mutual respect for each other. And from day one, his goal was to mentor me and to grow me through that process, knowing what the final outcome was going to be. So certainly, you know, and it evolves from I know nothing about business to, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, he's taught me quite a bit. You know, 10 years later, we're kind of both on equal footing. So I've always, you know, kind of looked up to what he's taught me and followed his advice. But, you know, he'll always have 10 or 15 years of extra experience on me that I'll never catch up to. So yeah, it evolved from, you know, being the newbie to being on pretty equal footing, but it took a long time.
Mm-hmm. I imagine. And you also said something that I wanted to touch on, which was not knowing so much about the business side, which is honestly the truth for a lot of dentists, since that's not something we're taught in dental school. So I guess, and this is kind of a loaded question, how did you prepare for the business side, things like HR, payroll, leases, compliance, that sort of thing?
So I relied 100% on my mentor, because he had been doing that. So, you know, his previous single practice you know, very, very, and we still operate this way today, very hands-on. He also has a business degree, background before dental school. So he knew quite a bit more than your average dentist, but I went straight into it thinking, okay, I'm going to figure out the orthodontics as I go, and I'm going to figure out the business ownership as I go, just kind of riding on his coattails. So I had a good mentor, and he taught me, you know, he taught me enough to get me off the ground. You know, there are a lot of things that we'll talk about, you know, coming up in the next few minutes, where you kind of have to learn something on your own or learn something new. But for the most part, I relied on my wonderful mentor to teach me.
So actually, I'm just going to go ahead and ask you, did you have any, you recommend any courses or consultants learning a lot of these things?
Yeah, from a business ownership background, not specifically. I kind of thought that this question was going to come up. So this is, we may talk more about this later, but I'll go ahead and answer it now. When it comes to courses, or people that you're paying to do things, you know, consulting, HR, things like that, there are a million different resources out there. But one of the things that I would like to say to that, I know this is not quite on topic, but I spend a lot of my CE hours doing practice management kind of CE, which, you know, gears a lot towards customer service, you know, patient experience, building teams, team relationships, things like that. So I do spend quite a bit of time, you know, learning from various people in that aspect. But in the initial stages, no, I didn't, you know, I didn't know what I needed to know. So I didn't really dive into any of that.
So I have a question. When you started this endeavor, did you have a hard deadline exit plan that your mentor knew he was exiting right?
No, not at all. We had a general idea. We knew the initial plan was, you know, obviously knowing things could change. The initial plan was I'm going to come in as a 100% employee associate, you know, your typical associate agreements, up to a certain point, however many years later that took, et cetera, we would reevaluate the finances of the business. Basically we would evaluate, okay, how much sweat equity and, you know, actual literal capital have I as an employee put into the business, and what does that mean as far as my ownership? We kind of did that, and just over the years we would, you know, transfer percentage of ownership or shares or whatever you want to call it from him to me. So I was kind of working my way up into, you know, partnership, and it, you know, it started at 25% and then 50%. But as far as a hard deadline, no. You know, a lot of young dentists come out and go into an associateship with a dentist that knows they're looking to retire or to sell. This was not one of those situations at all. This was more of a let's form a partnership and long term we'll see what happens. My mentor's a few years older than me, and we kind of just assumed that he would step down before I did and it would eventually become mine, but there was no date in mind at all. We were just working together.
So it sounds like with any good business partner in really any field, that communication and that relationship with your partner is really, really important. Can you tell me how you navigated that with your business partner?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously trust and openness are critical to any kind of partnership or any kind of associateship. And luckily we had that from day one and still do. You know, I think the important thing is that both parties have to agree on some financial things. You don't want to assume that, you know, your partner's okay with you making a big purchase if your partner's not, right? We both have financial interest in the company. So we agreed pretty early on that any large purchase over, I don't know the exact amount, over X number of dollars, let's say like a piece of equipment or, you know, a new scanner or a new laser, those were things that had to be agreed upon and that needed to be beneficial to both parties. But then on the flip side, we agreed that, you know, we were both going to practice the way that we wanted to practice. So if I wanted to use one bracket system and he wanted to use another bracket system or something similar, that was part of our arrangement. So, I mean, there was some actual, you know, legal documents in place that made sure that we both knew the expectations of that. But again, if you're working with someone you know well and you trust and has integrity, it's never been a problem. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have to communicate those things. You know, practicing orthodontics in a group setting like that, you also get to communicate different ideas and different techniques and different technologies and, you know, new things you learn with each other. So that's beneficial. But yeah, communication, you have to, I guess this is kind of obvious in saying, but you have to communicate with a business partner like that, or things tend to go downhill. So you have to just maintain open communication with pretty much anything, even if you think it's redundant. Never a bad idea to bounce it off your mentor or your partner.
So now I know you didn't necessarily shop around to, you know, for a practice, for a potential mentor. But we have a lot of listeners that are in a situation where maybe they are looking to buy into a practice or they're looking to, you know, start a partnership. Do you have any advice for them in terms of what they should be looking for in a good business partner? I know you mentioned documenting everything, so you've got something tangible to refer back to, but do you have any other advice or perspective there that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I do. Not so much from a legal point of view, just a personal point of view. If you're going to go into an associateship, you know, with or without intent to buy, whether it's whether you're buying that practice outright, whether you're going to associate for 10 years and then buy, or whether it's a long-term partnership, the culture of the practice needs to be like-minded with what you're looking for. The practice style needs to be like-minded. You know, you can have two dentists that are absolute best friends outside of the office, but the type of dentistry that you want to do, you know, whether you want high volume, whether you want high quality, I mean, there's a million different ways to practice dentistry. And if you're going to go into any practice and have any financial interest in it, you need to make sure that your values and your ideals are in alignment with the other partner. You know, for you to go in and purchase a practice and think that you're going to change everything and make it your way is not really realistic. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if that practice has been in business for 10 or 15 or 20 years, the staff has those ideals. The patients have those ideals. There's a reason that everyone's there. And so I would say, you know, obviously you need to look for someone that that you get along with and that you think is you know, a good person and has a good business mind, but you need to make sure that what you want to do and what that person is currently doing are in alignment. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit of a rocky road.
And speaking of alignment, one thing that you kind of mentioned before was treatment philosophies and kind of materials that you're using kind of go, you know, hand in hand. How close do you feel like those need to be? Are you guys acting as each other's proxy, you know, when one goes on vacation, seeing each other's patients, or, you know, is it very separate?
Right. That's an impossible question to answer because it can go one direction or
You
the
try
other.
your best.
Right. So again, back to communication. Things tend to work better in an office where there's multiple doctors if those multiple doctors are basically doing the same thing and using the same things, right? It's just a lot less seamless. I'm sorry, it's a lot more seamless. The staff is going to be a lot better at doing their job if they're basically able to interchange doctors. If they have to if they have to change everything they're doing, whether it be materials or techniques, every time, that can get a little tricky. If you're seeing the other doctor's patient, or if you are both seeing patients and they're not getting continuity of care because they're getting one thing from one doctor and one thing from another doctor, that gets a little tough too. So on the surface, in a perfect world, yeah, everyone does the exact same thing. The reality of dentistry or any dental specialty is that just doesn't work. I can say from personal experience, when I came in and joined this partnership, one of the first things I told my mentor and I told the staff was, as of today, I will do everything exactly like Dr. Del Toro does it for now, and that way you guys don't have to adapt to me. It's easier for me to adapt to you than the other way around. But slowly over time, within the last 15 years, things just change. I pick up my own techniques and whatnot. So we still have a very similar practice philosophy, materials, that kind of stuff. But it's impossible to have two docs practice exactly alike. But it certainly helps in the beginning for the new guy to be, a little more accepting of what the old guy's doing.
I really like your take on that because, I mean, we've all had patients come in from other doctors' offices having a completely different treatment plan, and you really don't want that to happen under your roof, you know, to make sure that patients that are coming in do have that continuity of care. And then that also helps build that doctor-patient relationship. So
Right.
I really, really appreciate that. One, I
Let's
want to.
Oh, I was just going to say, let's talk about that first year. Like you said, you walked in the door and said you were going to do things their way.
Right.
What was your biggest surprise? What was your biggest challenge in that first year?
I would say from a clinical perspective, it wasn't that big of a deal. In residency, the way ortho residency works is you basically, act as a practicing orthodontist for 2 or 3 years. You're in the clinic treating patients. And we had identified that we were going to work together long enough in advance that I was really focused in my last year and a half of residency of picking up his way of doing things, knowing that this was going to happen.
This is the plan.
So by the time I got to day one in practice, I would I and I still tell patients this. I would tell patients, see that guy, he taught me everything I know. So we do things exactly alike. A lot of that's again to put the staff at ease and put the patients at ease. So from a clinical perspective, it wasn't that difficult of a transition because I was very well prepared for that. I would say the first year, which is always the hardest, I think the biggest struggle for me was, the way that we built our practices. There was, I was basically working at a new practice, and I came in as a startup. So day one, I think I had one new patient exam on day one. And I think probably day two, probably nothing. So, a little bit of a tangent here, but year one, my biggest struggle was just, wow, this didn't take off as fast as I had anticipated or as fast as I had hoped. And, a little bit of boredom, a little bit of worry about, is this going to work? So you have to kind of be patient if you're coming into to a new practice or a new startup. I think the same could be said for if you go into an associateship. The mentoring doctor is probably going to, steer some patients your way, but a lot of new associates are kind of tasked with, okay, you kind of need to grow your own practice within this practice. And that can be a little bit slower than you think coming right out of school, especially.
How did you pivot? We both have the same question.
How'd you pivot? How'd you deal with that?
Perseverance. You kind of have to have faith in what you're doing. I felt pretty strongly that, you know, all the things that go into a practice, location, I felt our location was amazing. Our branding and our marketing, I thought were great. I was working pretty hard as far as making relationships with referring doctors, you know, shaking hands, having lunches, getting my face and name out there. So, you know, I worked pretty hard about that. I had a pretty strong conviction that our practice model was really, really good. So I knew, and I just kind of blindly followed my faith that it was going to work. So just hang in there and persevere. And yeah, a lot of sleepless nights, you know, laying down at night after you run payroll and the numbers are not looking great in your head and you're sweating it, you know, do I make a paycheck this month or not? But you just, I hung in there, just stuck with it. And thankfully it worked.
Yeah. I mean, that's really raw and vulnerable. And I think that's a side of ownership that sometimes we gloss over because we see the end result, but there's a lot of sleepless nights, like you said, and you're responsible for a lot of the people that you're, all of the people that you're employing. So right. I can only imagine. Looking back though, now, how long have you owned the practice?
So I have been sole owner for about 3 years now.
And then you've worked
there.
I've been
day one is, I've been here a little over 15 years. So looking back,
what do you wish you had known before becoming,
becoming
an owner?
There's so many things. You know, the biggest, you know, it's like we talked about earlier, it's been a very gradual transition in most people's eyes from 100% employee, in a two doctor, two practice setting to now 15 years later, you know, 100% owner of my practice. You know, that basically took 12 years. That's a pretty gradual transition. But even now being full owner, there are so many other things that as an associate, you don't realize that the actual owner is taking care of, from a financial point of view and a legal point of view. Right. And then when you become actual full owner on day one, it's like, oh, by the way, you're now responsible for this
all
list of 10 things, yeah. Right? That I've always been doing, you know, for us kind of in the background, which takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of money. You know, people who, you know, employee dentists or non-dentists for that matter, don't realize how many different annual, you know, license renewals that there are from all these different agencies, you know, how many regulatory things, you know, paying your sales tax, you know, creating and a lot of those things when ownership changes from one guy to the next, you know, the mentor, the previous owner, all of those things were under his or her business entity. And usually you create a new one. So there's a lot of, you know, changing names and changing account names. And so I think the biggest thing I wish I knew going into it was how much that was going to take, both as a time frame and a financial frame. I still would have done it. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of that had to happen.
What systems do you have in place? I mean, you, just hearing you say all of these things is making my mind spin. So like what systems do you find have worked for you to kind of keep everything straight, making sure that you're not letting anything lapse in terms of licensures and all of that stuff?
Yeah, so I have about 13 post-it notes stuck on my wall with individual dates. I am very old school.
Is that patent pending?
Analog, yeah. I'm very old school analog when it comes to that. And literally, I have post-it notes behind me that you can't see with, you know, dates, like, you know, your radiology license expires on this day and your radiology QAQCs are due on this date. So I probably could and should do a better job with something like that. Maybe one of you young people can teach me how to chat GPT something about that. But, you know, as far as systems go, you kind of get into a rhythm. We'll talk about this a little bit later too, but I'm very hands-on with the finances of my practice. I do my own bookkeeping, things like that. And so you kind of just get into a rhythm on, okay, I know what at this date of this month, we have to do this and this and this. So you get into a rhythm. But yeah, I don't have as good of a system as I probably could have. I evolved that way, and now I'm stuck in the dark ages.
Are those post-it notes color coded?
No, they're whatever color I happen to grab. So they're all orange until orange runs out, and then they're all pink or whatever is the next color in the box.
Just checking.
Yep.
I want to talk about building your team and like team and leadership as a dentist.
Right.
I know you talked a little bit about, you know, having that transition from being the associate and now being the sole owner. I want you to tell me a little bit about building your team. What are you looking for in new hires? What are, in general, what needs to align with you in order to move forward with a candidate?
Right. So again, I feel very strongly that comes down to the culture of the office. You know, there's two parts to a practice. There's the clinical aspect, you know, and then there's the, you know, a lot of people call it the touchy-feely aspect, the mm-hmm. what gives you the feel goods. And I call that the culture. And that's more the customer service. I'm a big believer that, you know, you can teach any capable human pretty much any kind of different dental technique, but you can't teach customer service. There's just certain people that have it, and you can kind of tell that when you're talking to them. You want someone who has that inert desire to please the patients and to please the other staff members. Because you can train everything else. So, you know, when we're building a team, you know, experience, all that stuff's really important, but it's a lot easier to teach that. It's a lot more difficult to convince someone to buy into a culture that they're not automatically bought into.
So kind of breaking down that interviewing process, do you have, are you doing it to where you've got like multiple interviews where they're meeting with the team, you're taking their feedback? How important is that to you? Especially because you've really built a practice culture where, you know, you've had such a seamless transition from the first owner to having more of a partnership, and now you being a sole owner, that, you know, doesn't just happen overnight. So I assume you put a lot of thought into how this has come to be.
Right. So my typical, if I was going to pick a new team member, especially now with, you know, the modern ways where you can find resumes or resumes can find you, you know, typically by the time I am sending an email or a text or a phone call to a candidate, I know quite a bit about them already, just based off of, you know, they're attaching their resumes to, you know, Cloud and, you know, Indeed, all those things. But I mean, there's personality traits and all this stuff that if you have time and the energy, you can look into. And after just a little bit of thinking about it, you can kind of figure out. So, you know, I pretty much know if a candidate's going to come and interview with us, you know, do they have the experience and the clinical skills needed to at least come in and become a trainee? Probably so. We probably know that. And so then again, it's just a matter of, you know, you bring them in or you talk to them on the phone, whatever they need to do, or Zoom, whatever we do these days. But my first interview with them is basically a one-on-one small talk conversation, almost as if you were going to meet them at a coffee shop and get to know them. You can tell a lot about someone, their mannerisms, their, you know, their choice of words when they're having a conversation. Are they nervous? Are they at ease? And so, you know, the first thing is kind of find out, okay, can I work with this person 40 hours a week for the next however many years? I don't care how good they are of a chairside assistant. Can we be friends, right? Can we be work friends? And if they pass that test, and you can usually tell pretty quick after you've done, you know, a couple dozen interviews, if they pass that test, then the next question is, okay, can this person be work friends with the other team? You know, I've got this other team behind me that I built the same way. So, you know, if I love someone and I love their clinical skills, and I think they're a great match with the team, but another one of the critical team members who's been here for a while has any kind of red flags or, you know, catches a vibe that I don't catch, you know, that can be, you know, a man, woman thing or anything like that, then that's kind of a red flag. I've made mistakes in the past where I've been like, oh no, you're, you're crazy. She's fine. She's wonderful. She's going to do good. And it doesn't work out good. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a multiple interview process. The second one's usually, you know, with the team. Mm-hmm. And if the team gets good vibes, they get brought back in again for, you know, what we call kind of a working interview. Basically it's, okay, do you have enough skill level that I can train you to do what I want you to do in the clinic, but are you the right fit, emotionally, you know, is your personality going to fit with our culture in our office? And also, are you going to be able to work well with the rest of the team without drama and butting heads? And if you get through that, you usually have a pretty solid hire.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. And I think that speaks a lot to your office culture and philosophies, which I really wanted to hear a little bit more about. You were alluding before that you're more of a hands-on owner. And can you talk to me a little bit about how how that influences your leadership style and the culture in the office?
Right. So, you know, with any business, it can follow any number of ways, but, you know, I've seen everything from dentistry. So, it ranges from, you know, an employee dentist that works for a DSO, for all intents and purposes, they show up, they clock in, they do dentistry and they clock out. I know it's not quite that simple and I'm not trying to speak down to that, but that's kind of on one end of it. And then on the other end, you've got the dentist that has their hands or their fingers on every single little aspect of what goes on in their office. They do their own bookkeeping. Sometimes they file their own taxes. They're doing their own ordering. They literally know every single thing that's going on in their office. They're doing payroll, they're calculating hours. So that's kind of the extreme in the other direction. They don't farm anything out. Mm-hmm. I think that business model is getting, you know, fewer and far between, I think, just because mm-hmm. our busy lives. But I like to keep my finger on the pulse of pretty much everything mm-hmm. in the office. And I think the best way to do that, in my opinion, is to do your own bookkeeping. So, mm-hmm. And there's a difference in bookkeeping and, you know, financial management and tax planning, that kind of stuff. We have to have experts do that. But when you do your own bookkeeping, it kind of opens your eyes to where is your money going and who is your money going to, right? And that can help you keep a much closer eye on your practice. You know, I also know a lot of doctors who basically will check their bank account balance about once every 2 weeks. And as long as there's money in the bank, we're good to go. Let's just keep on going. But they don't know, you know, they don't know what's going out the door. They don't know what's coming in. So as far as me keeping an eye on thing, I really think that keeping an eye on your everyday income, everyday expenses, payroll expenses, your supplies. You know, I don't do my own ordering, of course, but I know what we order and when we order it in general, just to know if we're overspending. So I think that's a really, really good way to keep a pulse on what's going on. And, you know, you're also invested in the health of the practice, which helps you create relationships with your team, right? Mm-hmm. If you go and lock yourself in your office and the only time you come out is to do dentistry, you're not interacting with your team. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're involved in the day-to-day operations, you know, when there's not a patient in the chair and your team's going through taking inventory and you're answering questions and helping them decide what to order, you know, it's more of a team approach that way. So I think that creates a healthier environment.
So in terms of leadership, you've got your owner doctor typically. And then I feel like in my experience, the next go-to person is your office manager. So how has that, what kind of relationship do you have with your office manager? How much responsibility do you delegate to them? And you talked a little bit about like keeping a really good firm pulse on everything in the office.
Right.
How much oversight, I guess, are you having over your office manager?
Yeah, so you need to have quite a bit of oversight. But at the same time, you have to not micromanage, and it's hard to do both of those things at the same time. So, you know, the younger the practice, the less busy you are. You know, I can see it easy for your office manager to be more of a receptionist. They can answer phones and do that, but you're not quite tasking them with some of the bigger things yet. And then the busier the clinic gets, the busier the doctor gets, the more help you need. And in my case, you know, that has evolved to, you know, my office manager is basically in charge of all of the finances. I'm taking oversight of that, obviously, as just kind of a checks and balances system. And then she's obviously, you know, she's the face of the practice. So yeah, I agree. She's definitely number two in the practice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with every year that passes, you know, I entrust her with kind of a new thing, right? It's like, oh, it's 2026. It's your, you know, whatever anniversary. Guess what? You now get to take over this because you've proven to me over the last several years that you're loyal and that you're honest and that you're fully capable. But it's been organic and it's been gradual. You know, I've been blessed to have very few office managers over the last 15 years because they tend to stick until life changes course for them. But it's a gradual thing, you know, kind of give them something entry level, you know, that you think they can handle. You also have to consider, and this sounds horrible to say, but just because you think you know someone, you may not know someone. I know a lot of guys who have been taken advantage of by their office managers, you know, long-term employees that have, you know, gotten into a bind and started stealing from them. So, you know, you got to be careful. But again, if you build that culture and you know that you have a trustworthy person who's, you know, mentally capable to do what you do, just kind of gradually give them a task until they master that. And then give them another one. But, you know, we still kind of keep an eye on each other.
Yeah, no, it's really hard to strike that balance. It sounds like, especially since you don't want to lose the culture that you've worked so hard to create. I could talk to you forever about this, but unfortunately, the thing that's really on my mind that I really wanted to ask you about is tough HR situations. You know, as a dentist, it sounds like you, especially as an owner, you're wearing so many different hats. And I guess you're also HR. Can you talk me through any situations that are like coming to mind, how you handled them? I would love to know.
HR situations tend to become a problem if you let something negative go on for too long. You know, there's an old saying that people don't sue their friends. And what that means is if you're a really nice guy and you're really honest with someone, the odds of someone, you know, getting mad at you and suing you go down, right? If you're a really honest and open and fair employer and you have an issue with an employee, and, you know, usually worst case scenario, that is you have to let that person go. You know, if you do so with compassion and you have actual, you know, we're going to let you go for a legitimate reason. You know, no one likes to get fired, obviously. Right. But there are ways to do it correctly and with compassion. And there are ways, the easy way to do it is just, you know, you can text them, you can break up with someone over a text, but that doesn't mean that's the right way to do it.
Right.
So, you know, if you handle the situation properly, and again, with some empathy, it's going to de-escalate the situation quite a bit. So the first bit of advice I would say is just be a nice person and treat that person the way you would want to be treated in the worst case scenario, the worst day of their life. You know, what's the best way to let someone down? But I understand that's not always going to work. But fairness, honesty, openness is important. The other thing that I would, you know, be very adamant about, especially with the young doctor, is document everything and have witnesses. You know, if you're having an HR issue with an employee, you know, having a closed door meeting with that employee with no witness, with no way to document, with no way to back it up, that's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where your office manager comes into play. You know, your office manager is your teammate. So, you know, have someone there who can, you know, say, no, that didn't happen this way, or this did happen that way, and document everything. You know, employees' files are there for a reason. And that'll generally keep you out of trouble.
Yeah, no, it sounds like just a cumbersome thing to deal with to begin with, but these are really easy ways to approach that. I want to switch gears and ask you about balancing, you know, your professional life with your personal life. So I'm sure many of our listeners may already know you're married to Dr. Tricia Kimes, who also is a general dentist and practice owner. So how are you guys managing both managing your practices? You guys have kids, a lovely marriage. How has that been for you throughout this journey?
Yeah, so this is the part of the podcast where the honesty may get a little too honest, but
no, we appreciate it.
So
I hope she's listening.
Yeah, I'm sure she will. It's really, really hard. I'll just, that's the most honest way the most honest thing I can say is it's really, really difficult. You know, being a practice owner of a busy practice, you know, when our doors are open at this office, I'm seeing patients. Mm-hmm. And that leaves, you know, countless other tasks that have to be done that every dentist has to deal with. You're writing referrals, you're having to check some chart notes, you know, not to mention the business part of it, the accounting, the bookkeeping, you know, reconciling credit card statements, all of this stuff. And so to be that honest with you, as a business owner, and in our case, as two business different owner. Practice owners, we work from home a lot more than we wish we could. And that is one of the biggest sacrifices of being a business owner. And I think that goes for any business. I mean, you know, if you own a lawn care business, you're mowing lawns from 8 to 5, you know, you're not, you know, taking care of billing and invoicing. A lot of that stuff happens after the kids go to bed. So it's hard. You know, neither one of us are proud to admit it, but we will admit it. There's a lot of after hours behind the scenes stuff that we do. You know, on top of that, we're super dedicated to CADS and TDA and AGD and all these other organizations. So we do quite a lot. You know, that is one of the, you know, kind of the pieces of advice that I would give to anyone looking to become a business owner, especially if you're coming from a, you know, just a typical associateship, is be prepared to spend a lot more time babysitting your business. This is no longer a job. It's now your legacy. So it takes quite a bit of time. But with that being said, you just have to be able to, you know, put up a partition every now and then and say, okay, it's this o'clock. I'm going to go pick up this kid we're going to do dinner like a family. And so sometimes you have to leave things undone. I think that's one of the things that I've gotten really good at. And I mean that in a good way, is sometimes you just have to leave things undone. Not everything's going to get done on every single day, because you got a family to take care of and you got a household to take care of. Mm-hmm. So it can be challenging. But just, you can't let your practice take over your life.
Right.
You know, are you running your practice, or is your practice running you? That's kind of thing. It's usually a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. But there are certain times when you just have to tell yourself, you know, okay, this is going to have to wait till tomorrow or till next week. It's, you know, it's my family time. So you have to make sacrifices for both. You know, both of our kids and all of our family, for that matter, also understand that what we're doing is, you know, a little bit different. You know, we both run practices. We're both doctors and we're helping people. And so they understand sometimes they have to make some sacrifices. So it can be tough. But you make it work. You find a way to make it work.
That was a very well-rounded and very honest answer. And I really appreciate that. How do you kind of pour back into your own cup and take some personal, do you take any personal time, any hobbies that you've picked up?
Yeah. So luckily for me, my hobbies are watching my son play baseball and my daughter cheer, and taking my kids to do the things that they like. So, you know, we're at the age right now with our family that, you know, our family's life is what we like to do. Mm-hmm. And so luckily for me, my downtime is hanging out with my kids and doing mm-hmm. what they like to do. So find a hobby that you can share with your family that y'all can all do together. That
I
way,
like that. Yeah.
You know, if I'm not saying that it would be a bad thing. I love to fish. We'll use that as an example. But if I disappeared from my family for 8 hours every weekend to fish so that I could refill my cup, well, I'm emptying their cup a little bit more. So, so we choose to do things together as a family. That's how we refuel is family time.
I like that advice of like finding things in common with you, either your partner or your family members.
Yeah. Something everyone can do.
A little bit of both. Yeah. So a little bit of rapid fire questions here.
Okay.
What has been your proudest moment so far as a practice owner?
Not one single moment, but every time that I get to do treatment on a fellow dentist or especially their children, that's my biggest accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know, that verifies to me or justifies to me that the way that I'm doing things, the way that I'm running my practice, the way that I'm treating patients, my clinical excellence, that they know enough about it, that they trust their kids to me. That's always makes me feel really proud.
Big stamp of approval. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for someone considering ownership in today's market with, you know, DSOs, DPOs, what have you?
Yeah, I would say do it. Be scared, be cautious, be smart, and do some due diligence, and try to make a right decision. But I think it's worth it. You know, throughout the course of this whole podcast, I've tried to be as honest as I can. And some of the things about business ownership are not great, you know, the time commitment, the financial strains. But the gratification of knowing that I am creating something, a legacy, you know, technically something I could maybe hand down to my kids someday or to another young dentist, knowing that I can treat the people that I want to treat and treat them the way that I want to treat them and do it my way, that the joy of that far outweighs any negative of extra time or extra money. So I would say if you're on the fence, it's scary, but you're going to make it. So go do it.
I love that. So where do you see your practice and yourself 5 years from now? Do you think you'll bring on an associate maybe?
You know what? At this point, if I have to do rapid fire, I'm going to say no.
That's fair.
The opportunity that was given to me by Dr. Del Toro was absolutely amazing. And I every single day thank my lucky stars that I was in the right place at the right time and met the right guy. To be able to give that opportunity to someone else, is that in the future? Probably so. Is that in the next 5 years? No. To be honest with you, we've actually been talking about with the kids, is this something they're too young to know for sure? But they're not too young to actually start laying some seeds. So, I mean, Trisha and I both have practices. Is there some kind of potential that this could become a legacy, you know, inheritance kind of thing? Yeah. So that's something we have to look forward to. If my son or daughter want to become an orthodontist, I'd sure like to be here to mentor them before I retire.
Mm-hmm. Truly a family run dental
yes, practice.
Yes. So this is a little tongue-in-cheek kind of segment a game that we want to play before we let you go. It's called What the Suck. And what sucked in your journey and how did you suck it up?
Take on suction.
Yes. Yeah, we've kind of touched on it a little bit. You know, I think no matter how you end up in a position like mine, you know, whether you start from scratch, whether you come in and, you know, buy an existing practice, however you wind up as an owner, you don't think about it much when you're just an employee, but the economy has a really huge effect on business owners more so than it does their employees, right? Mm-hmm. So when the economy is not doing really, really great and people are pinching their pennies and, you know, as an orthodontist or as a general dentist, if our general revenues are down, well, our employees get paid first and then our bills get paid, you know, before we get paid. So they don't tend to feel it. So I think the suck is, no matter how long you've been in practice, no matter how good you are, no matter how successful you are, there will be times when in the back of your mind, you're thinking, okay, is this it? You know, are we, you know, is the lifespan of this business, you know, come and gone? Businesses don't tend to last forever. So that is 100% on your shoulders. You know, you're the top of the pyramid. So for me, that's the biggest suck is, you know, at any time in the last 15 years, just the unknown of, okay, what's going to happen next month? You know, are we good? So there's just a lot of pressure and a lot of stress that comes with that. So I think that's the biggest suck of the whole thing.
And lastly, do you have a specific book, person, CE course that you would recommend to our listeners?
I don't. I get handed a lot of, you know, self-help books and, you know, the effective habits kind of stuff, and they wind up getting on a bookshelf. I basically just don't have time to read them. So specific recommendations on CE
apart
or
from the drill
books
down.
or people. Yeah, so listen to the drill down. I don't. What I will say is when it comes to CE, again, don't ignore the practice management part of it. You know, a lot of dentists ignore non-scientific CE because they don't get as much credit for it, or it may not count towards their, you know, towards their annual requirement from the state board. But I have learned so much about practice management, emotional intelligence, just things that help make your practice a lot more successful than how good you are at putting on braces or prepping a crown. So don't ignore those types of CEs. On the flip side, you have to continue to drive yourself to be the best clinician that you can be. So one of the pieces of advice I always give to young dentists is I don't care how many hours of CE you need to renew your license. You need to go above and beyond that with really, really high level, high quality CE. Unfortunately, most of those are expensive. So, you know, you can name drop all you want, Coyce, Dawson, anything that's a continuum that is, considered to be really upper level CE, those things can change your life and change your practice as well. It's a huge financial commitment. It's a huge time commitment. You usually have to travel for, long weekends or weeks, but over the course of your career, never ever stop learning, but you need to learn at a really, really high level. A little bit of a tangent, but also something I wanted to get in just as a business owner and, with a wife that's a business owner, never underestimate how valuable a good financial advising team could be. And I don't just mean someone who is investing your 401k with you. So, you can put your money in the market and someone will watch it and they'll earn a commission and that's great. But there are a lot of companies out there that you're actually, paying a retainer to that will not only watch your money, but, we have a go-to team that any kind of accounting question, any kind of, basically anything that has to do with dollars, either coming in or going out or reading contracts, we have a team pretty much at our beck and call. And that's been one of the most best investments we've ever had. So go to lots of CE, be a great practice manager, but be a great clinician, but also have a good team behind you to help because you're not always going to know the answer.
Well, Dr. Kimes, we want to thank you so much for sharing your journey. Before we go, where can our listeners connect with you or learn more about your practice?
So first thing you need to do is come to a CADS meeting because I will be there and you can come see me in person. if any young people want to get in touch with me and ask me any question about anything, whether it's related to CADS or organized dentistry or orthodontics or just practice ownership, I'm around, I'm everywhere that CADS is. Worst case scenario, if you don't know me or don't know anyone who does, go to my practice website. I guess that's the easy way, circlecortho.com. And there's a contact us with an email kind of thing, and that goes straight to my office manager and she'll forward it straight to me. So you can find me via email if you want. But get involved with the Capital Area Dental Society, and I'm always around. So you can come find me that way.
Well, everyone, if you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. See you on the next episode.